American Family Mutual Insurance.
May it please the court.
You'll be called when your opponent is ready. Mr. Lasker.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm here representing appellant Gary St. Louis. And we respectfully submit that the granting of summary judgment by the district court here was, in doing so, the district court necessarily weighed the evidence, made determinations of credibility, construed the evidence in a light most favorable to American Family, made inferences from facts in favor of American Family, and accepted as true many of the facts that a jury would not be required to believe. And in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, the Supreme Court said clearly that the court must disregard all evidence favorable to the moving party that the jury is not required to believe. The court should give credence to the evidence favoring the non-moving party. And we respectfully submit that if the court does not follow that standard, that then the plaintiff's Seventh Amendment right to a trial by jury and his Fifth Amendment due process right to a trial by jury is denied.
But, you know, I don't see how that could possibly be for the following reason. The standard of review in this court is de novo review of any decision to grant summary judgment. So in the final analysis, there either are disputed issues of material fact that can be found on the record that comes up to us, in which case, of course, we would reverse the summary judgment and send it back for trial, or there are not disputed issues of material fact, in which case we would affirm. Either way, what the district court has done isn't the last word on these things, and hopefully we are able to pick up that set of cases in which district courts have perhaps gone too far. It happens now and then. Everyone's human. I don't think they're out there trying to deny people Seventh Amendment rights, but I don't see the risk to the Seventh Amendment by the time you have de novo review in the Court of Appeals.
Well, I see your point, Your Honor, and the Seventh and Fifth Amendment right, I guess, really just means that there is a line of demarcation at some point.
Sure, there is, and that's what we're trying to achieve, and I'm sure the district judges are too, which isn't to say that there aren't mistakes now and then, but there is a process for catching them.
Well, if we are here then on that process, so that there is no constitutional problem, I respectfully submit that on this record, summary judgment cannot properly be granted because it requires a weighing of the evidence.
Can you tell me what personal knowledge Mr. St. Louis had of the qualifications of the people who were invited to interview for these Tier 2 positions?
Yes, he worked in the workplace with these people. He knew them from working with them over a substantial period of time. He certainly knew whether they were CPCUs. He knew whether they had college backgrounds. He knew from working with them what they knew or didn't know about systems work or computers. And he did not purport to evaluate all of the people who were granted interviews, but only those people whom he knew and knew well with regard to their backgrounds and experience. And it is that part of his affidavit which we think is admissible evidence because it is well-grounded in the experience and personal observations that he has. Reasonable jurors could disagree with the district court's interpretation of the evidence throughout the decision of the district court. And when that is the case, summary judgment should not be granted. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Munson.
Court, please. My best shot in this case, it seems to me,
is the district court's opinion. The district court carefully parsed the facts and the law and wrote a lengthy and very patient opinion on this case. We contend, obviously, that there is no evidence here. How many times can you say there is no evidence? And that's incredibly hard to write a brief that says there's nothing there. And I assume that's true for an opinion, but this judge patiently did that. My second shot is that there were five people who evaluated Mr. St. Louis. Mr. Zwetler and Mr. Wilde examined him and denied him an interview for the purpose of the product design manager position and a product design consultant position. Ms. Geisler and again Mr. Wilde from HR denied him an interview for the system design consultant position. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Zedinga and Mr. Ariella, also from HR, denied him an interview for the profit and growth consultant. Mr. Zwetler supervised Mr. St. Louis for a year prior to that decision. He goes a long way back with him. Mr. Zedinga, you dealt with Mr. Zwetler in his role as a supervisor from a division. And Ms. Geisler knew him and dealt with him also. So three of those people had personal knowledge of Mr. St. Louis and their working relationship with him. Two of them, the HR people, did not know Mr. St. Louis, but they knew the job. They participated in creating the job, and they knew that the consultant position was one that required leadership and people skills.
Isn't one of the big problems here, though, that it seems that nobody ever gave Mr. St. Louis feedback about this boat project? And so it's very hard to know whether this was an afterthought on American Family's part or whether there really was a negative reaction to his leadership skills at the time. No one ever told him other than patting him on the back for it.
Court, please, at our brief on page 18, we cited to the finding of fact that we proposed. That finding of fact was that Mr. Zwetler had concerns about the boat policy, that he discussed his concerns with Mr. St. Louis, that Mr. Salzwedel also had concerns about the boat policy, and that Mr. Zwetler was frustrated because he had to deal with that issue on three separate occasions. That finding of fact was not denied by the
Right. What he says is that this, you know, corresponded to a very tiny part of the policy, you know, kind of a tail wagging the dog situation.
It may be, you know, we're talking about boat hoists and the value of boat hoists. Would we call that a sliver or not a sliver? Okay. But to the extent that a supervisor has to deal with that issue on three separate occasions with the person reporting to him, I think that's a justifiable and a reasonable reason for that supervisor to be unhappy about it.
Do we have any context, though? I mean, what if follow-up is usual in 20 occasions and this was only three? Or what if follow-up is, you know, what if things are perfect otherwise and three seemed like a huge number? Do we have any sense of how things operated at the company?
That is, how many times would I have to go back to your
yeah,
your
you,
employee?
Yeah, you create a new program, and there's usually a period of time during which bugs are worked out in just about anything.
I agree with that, but Mr. Zwetler was unhappy that he had to go back to him three times. And Mr. Depke, another person from the field force, said that he was unhappy about the way the boat hoist issue was conducted by Mr. St. Louis. What we have here then is five people who have made a decision with respect to interviewing him. Five people then that Mr. St. Louis says were dishonest in that decision. Now that's a big bite to take out, that these five people, three of them, three working groups, working independently, coming to that conclusion. It is clear, however, that Mr. St. Louis voices most of his disappointment with respect to Mr. Zwetler. Mr. Zwetler and Mr. St. Louis have known each other for a long time. Mr.
St. Louis hired Mr. Zwettler when he came to work for American Family. Mr. Zwettler worked for Mr. St. Louis for 3 years. In August of 2000, when Mr. Zwettler was appointed to supervise the property lines division, seven people, Mr. St. Louis was one of them. Mr. St. Louis said that my relationship with Mr. Zwettler, back when he worked for me, was fine, good relationship. And that my relationship with Mr. Zwettler when he came in as my supervisor was also a good relationship. That relationship remained good until he left the company. Mr. Zwettler, from his point of view, said that Mr. St. Louis was a hard worker. He put in extra hours when necessary. He knew his job. He knew his policies. He knew the industry. He was good at focusing in on those particular portions of the policy necessary. He believed strongly and told Mr. St. Louis, you are good at the specialist position, the product design specialist. That's your area. That's your forte. And he encouraged him to remain with the company to do that. That's hardly evidence of age discrimination.
But that would have been at the $20,000 pay cut level, though.
It would have been ultimately at a $20,000 pay cut. It's important to know here, however, that Mr. St. Louis, that the policy of the company, it's a part of Mr. St. Louis's deposition, Exhibit 12 to Record 23, was that the company, if the salary was $20,000 less, in this case, more than 10% was the issue, that then that salary would be reduced over a 2-year period.
No, I understand that they try to, you know, prevent people from having their budgets go terribly awry, but the fact is, I mean, losing, for most people anyway, in the real world, a $20,000 pay cut is not a small blow to take. And if that were done, if you announced tomorrow, we're cutting the pay of all of our employees over the age of 40 by $20,000, I assume that you would expect an age discrimination case hard on the heels of that announcement.
I would guess, and even if we did it over 2 years, I would
even
think that's
true.
I would agree with that.
Even if you did it over 2 years, you'd get the same lawsuit.
But when we have one employee under these circumstances, a fairly large company going through a reorganization, what was going to happen during that 2 years, who knows? What would happen to Mr. St. Louis, and what other opportunities would be made available?
They could reduce his salary by another
$10,000.
Okay.
In any event, Mr. Zwettler was praised him in terms of his work, wanted him to stay, and he did not believe, however, that Mr. St. Louis was a people person. He came to the conclusion that he was not one who could work with people, who was good at working with people to bring them together to work as a team. And he came to that conclusion, Mr. Sedinga came to that conclusion, and Ms. Keisler came to that conclusion. That's pretty powerful evidence with respect to age discrimination. Counsel argues in his brief that, and what the district court said was that Mr. Zwettler cooked the performance evaluation. He did an early performance evaluation of 4 of his 7 employees, one of whom was Mr. St. Louis, beginning in April of 2001. Problem with, and Mr. St. Louis argues that's suspicious, that he was attempting to set him up for not being given the consultant position. Problem with that is, at that point in time, Mr. Zwettler didn't know what position Mr. St. Louis going to look for or apply for. It's a free country. He could apply for 4, he could apply for 1, he could apply for any number. But there was no knowledge as to what Mr. St. Louis was going to apply, what job he was going to apply for. And more important, there was no knowledge at that point in time as to what the price would be, the salary for those jobs. How could he cook the performance evaluation to hurt him from salary point of view unless you knew what it was? Finally, of those 4 people who were given an early performance review, Mr. Sensenbrenner, age 55, and Ms. Morton, age 49, were part of that early performance review, and they were given interviews, and they were hired for the consultant position. Mr. Schuler, age 49, was also one of those early performance review people, and he was given a specialist position.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Lasker?
Yes, Your Honor, just briefly. What I just listened to from opposing counsel would be a very competent closing argument to a jury on the facts as they are seen by American Family. But in our brief in chief at pages 24 through 48, we very carefully laid out all of the evidence that contradicts up one side and down the other the story that was just told to you by Mr. Munson. And in our reply brief at pages 2 through 9 and 19 through 21, we have carefully gone back to the record and pointed out not less than 38 significant evidentiary points that support the conclusion that this is a prima facie case and that there is reasonable evidence of pretext. And the decision of the district court in this case and the argument that's just been made by Mr. Munson ignores the affidavits that were put into the record by the plaintiff. It flies in the face of the very substantial evidence of this man's outstanding career of accomplishment with the company over 29 years. It disregards the job descriptions that are in the record and the careful discussion of the similarities between the job that he had and the jobs that he was seeking. And when one recognizes that Mr. St. Louis was denied the opportunity to merely interview for a job just like the job that he had had for the last 10 years of his 29 years with the company, there certainly is something very, very suspicious. And when you look at the suspicious timing of the review that was seized upon as really the basis for the rationale to deny him an interview, the timing of it is suspicious. The fact that it was conducted only for those people that were older than that were of the age range that Mr. St. Louis was, I believe all of them in their 50s who were suspiciously reviewed at the last moment. And when you think of the esteem that this man has had throughout his career, even Mr. Zwettler has pieces of evidence in the record that we have presented that is very flattering and very complimentary to Gary St. Louis for the very same things that he is now saying should be the reasons why he is denied an opportunity for an interview. Complimenting him on the boat project, on the communication skills, the leadership skills, it would be a travesty, really, for a jury not to be able to hear this evidence and hear the witnesses cross-examined, and an opportunity for the plaintiff to have his day in court. And I thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Lasker. The case is taken under advisement.